Hey, what's up, Blazer fans? Welcome to the Blazers Edge podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Radio Network. You can find us on Stitcher or Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Tara, and I am joined, as usual, by blog boy, Blazers outsider, Danny Meringue.
Wow. We gotta work on these titles.
What would you prefer to be called, Danny?
Man, it's just... there's just too many to count now.
The possibilities are endless, really, aren't they? I'll tell you what I'll call you.
Oh, God.
All right. So did you survive 3 days of no NBA? How did you pass the time?
Spent a lot of time with my girlfriend. That was pretty much it. She was glad to see me. So I got out of...
She was like, I remember you.
Yeah, I got out of basketball playoff mode for a couple of days, which was kind of weird. The sun actually came out. I don't know if those two things are, you know, linked or anything, but... Yeah, pretty much just kind of hung out for a few days. This has been the slowest time of the year for me so far. How about you?
Let's see. I watched a lot of that TV show Nashville. I got that from the library, and that's pretty much what I've been watching instead of basketball.
Oh, you really miss so it, don't you?
So it's probably a good thing that basketball is back. But, you know, now we're down to that where it's just a trickle, and pretty soon – well, I think we're still in a daily – game mode pretty much from here on out, but then it's going to go down to the every other day, and it's just going to get bleak. So we'll push through this though. And amazingly, the Blazers have provided us with a couple of things to talk about, despite the fact that we are in day what, like 400 of the off season for the Blazers. When was the last time they played? I don't even know. I can't even think back that far. But one thing that came out in the news recently in an article that was not really about the Blazers, but it was about LaMarcus. And we learned that last summer when LaMarcus was struggling and trying to figure out what he wanted to do with his role with the Cavs, we found out that LaMarcus called Damian Lillard about returning to the Trailblazers. Now, what do you think of this news? What was your first reaction when you heard this news?
Oh, wow. That was a year and a half too late, wasn't it? I mean, that was honestly, that was my immediate reaction. Like, God, there's so many things to take from this. One, the fact that LaMarcus was able to get past it. I never thought that would happen. Two, that he actually reached out to Damian to come back here. You know, if you really kind of piece that up or take that apart, he wanted to leave the golden franchise in San Antonio to come back to Portland. So I don't think things are quite as great there as everyone says they are currently. Obviously, you've got the Kawhi situation going on as well. I don't know. It's just, there's just so much. I mean, revisionist history. LaMarcus figures this out a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and we don't have the summer of 2016. You know, you've got Dame, CJ, and LaMarcus, and I think you're not questioning who your third guy is then. That's for sure.
And you've got all your money tied up in them.
Yeah, and having your money tied up in those guys is much, much more palatable than the way it currently sits. I mean, how hard is it really to fill out the roster then? I mean, you know, we're talking about a championship? Probably not. Are you in a Western Conference Finals bid? Yeah, probably. But, I mean, I almost wish LaMarcus wouldn't. Obviously, this wasn't made public by LaMarcus. I almost wish whoever reported this hadn't reported it. Because it just kind of opens up old wounds, at least for me.
Well, so my first reaction when I heard this, my first reaction was, who threw LaMarcus under the bus about this?
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't even think about all the other implications, but the fact that somebody would share that, you know, it's not even just that, I think you talked about this on The Outsiders. It's not just that my people will call your people and we'll have them talk. This was reported as the two of them actually talking.
Yeah, and if you think about that, the leak had to come from one of them or one of their camps.
Right. And I'm trying to think of what the advantage of that would have been? Like, is it just to make LaMarcus look weak now? Like, what's even the point of that? Like, haven't we all moved on from that?
Yeah.
Or is it really genuinely because people are looking at the Portland roster going, maybe if we could shake things up a little bit and we could start a few rumors, then it would be more likely that the Blazers, you know, might make some moves.
I mean, if I wanted to play devil's advocate here, and this is going way out on a limb,
play conspiracy theorist. It's the summertime.
Yeah, I mean, one of the thoughts that I had was that it would have come from Damian's camp if it was coming from one of their two camps. And that's to make Damian look better, to make him look like a leader. And I'm not saying this is from Damian by any way, shape, matter, form, or even his camp. Mm-hmm. But it makes him look better. It makes the team look more desirable. It makes San Antonio a less palatable-looking place. And it also makes LaMarcus look like the second-tier guy. I mean, in no way, shape, matter, form does this, from that standpoint, do anything negative to Damian Lillard. If anything, it puts him on a pedestal. And while it makes LaMarcus look like, you know, he was being petty. And on the underlying surface, I want to believe that this report is coming out because somebody's still irritated about LaMarcus leaving. Now, whether Dame talked to somebody and that person or their camp said leak this, I don't entirely know, obviously, but yeah, it reeks of NBA petty.
So you did a poll though. I mean, so we got NBA petty, but I'm wondering about the fan reaction. You did a poll and you asked fans if they would welcome LaMarcus back. What was the result of the poll?
It ended up being, I think, somewhere around 70-30 that they would welcome him back. I had a lot of.
Did that surprise you?
Yeah, because I still know the vitriol is out there. I actually figured it would be less in LaMarcus's favor, but there's still a few people that believe that LaMarcus isn't vilified, that he'd be welcomed back with open arms. And I think if anything, the poll at least shows that there's still some strong dislike for LaMarcus. Like when he comes back into town, he's still going to get booed. He's not Raymond Felton. But he's not being welcomed back like, you know, like Travis Outlaw or Jarrett Jack or something like that. You know what I mean?
You can't even put the two of them in the same sentence. That's not a fair comparison.
No, it's not. Yeah, right. I'm saying it's not like he's Raymond Felton or anything. I mean, they're nowhere even close. But he's not being welcomed back with open arms either. So it's a really, really weird situation. Like it's kind of cool to know that LaMarcus finally did, you know, have some second thoughts about it. But, I mean, to me, it reads kind of like an ex-lover. You know, someone's a little jaded. You want to go back. The pastures weren't as green as you thought they were on the other side. Mm-hmm. But the other part of that is, like, I don't want to know. Because the way this team is currently structured could have been completely different had he made a different decision. So, it's to me, ultimately, it ends up just being a bummer.
What does your team look like if he's still here?
I think you'd see more role players that are more specialized.
They probably wouldn't have had Ed Davis.
Probably not Ed. You probably don't hand out the contracts to Myers, Harkless, and Turner. And Crabb might still be.
I bet Aminu still comes.
I would assume Aminu's still there. You probably still have Robin Lopez. You probably don't do the move for Nurkic. Obviously, the draft picks after that, you're in a better position, so you're probably not picking up those assets. So you're probably a little bit more top-heavy, but you probably spread the money around a lot better, too. I mean, having your money tied up in Dame, CJ, and LaMarcus would probably be a lot better than the current standing. You could have seen them go somewhere else, particularly the forward positions, fill out the roster a little bit better.
What would be some of the ways that the actual basketball product would be different?
The focal point. Because, I mean, right now, you can give the ball to Dame or CJ and they can go get points. But how many guys, and this is something we talked about a million times, how many guys are a mismatch positionally? LaMarcus can be that. He can step out and hit threes. He can go to work on almost anybody in the post. You would have two of the best mid-range shooters in the league in CJ and LaMarcus. So it changes the way defenses have to defend you. A pick and roll with LaMarcus is much more dangerous and much, much more versatile than it is with Yusuf Nurkic. The options for the offense definitely change. The points of attack change. How defenses have to scheme the coverage. I mean, pick and roll, pick and pop, pick and dive, pick and short roll, the ball movement that's much, much more palatable because it's in the hands of somebody who can be multifaceted with it at all times.
So do you think they would have matched up better against the Pelicans if they'd had LaMarcus?
Because
on the one hand, LaMarcus is kind of a throwback. I mean, isn't he? Doesn't he play pretty old school?
Yep.
Type of basketball from the post, you know, back it down, turn around, shoot. I mean, he's not as – how does that match up against somebody like Anthony Davis?
I mean, you don't match up with Anthony Davis. He does what he does. But with LaMarcus, he's also able to work in the mid-range. He's also – and this is something I think was overlooked in his time here in Portland, was that he's one of the best pick-and-roll defenders or bigs in the league on the switch. Like, people really, really overlooked that in his time here. He's been phenomenal in San Antonio at it, with and without Kawhi Leonard. I mean, that's a huge change.
Is what made LaMarcus successful, or what makes him successful, is it a combination of his body type and his style of play? And if so, do the Blazers have anybody in the wings like that, or have they just moved on to a completely different style of basketball where they wouldn't need somebody like that?
I mean, LaMarcus is unique. I mean, he's a 7-footer who is incredibly strong. People still think of LaMarcus as the skinny kid from Texas. He's 270 pounds. I mean, he's a big dude.
Yeah, he hasn't been small for a long time.
No, but he's still thought of that way because of the way he plays, and it's kind of finesse. But, I mean, if you talk to any of the bigs in the league, you don't want to sit there and bang with him all night long. He'll wear you out. I don't think Portland has anybody really like LaMarcus, because there's not many guys like LaMarcus in the league's history. Collins could kind of be that in his switchability defensively, but strength-wise, he's nowhere even close. Size-wise, he's not close. Height, length, he's there. Mobility and foot speed.
Well, we just said that LaMarcus was very, very skinny when he first came in.
Getting that big, he's taking those trips to Germany we were talking about. Because LaMarcus got massive here. Nobody foresaw LaMarcus getting that big here. Mm-hmm. I think everybody assumed that LaMarcus would be like 235, 240 at his biggest. More Marcus Camby than DeMarcus Cousins. Mm-hmm. You like that, LaMarcus, Marcus, DeMarcus?
Yeah, very clever. Clever, Dan. You're really on your game. Well, I want to move on and talk about another big man. The big man who probably used to go up against LaMarcus Aldridge in practice every day. And that is Myers Leonard. Because there was also a recent article written by Kerry Eggers of... Tribune, right? Or no, he's Colombian.
No, Portland Tribune. You got it.
The Tribune. Okay, I was totally blanking there for a sec. Sorry. Kerry Eggers of the Tribune wrote a column about how it's time to trade Myers Leonard. So it's kind of time to talk about Myers. You and I both have enjoyed him as a person. We both like what he has brought in terms of he's always done what is asked of him, and he's present, and he's a good teammate, and he does all these things. He even has a lot of skills, but he's never been able to put them together on the floor in the way that Blazer fans have wanted him to. Kerry Eggers' argument is that it's time to trade Myers, and he thinks that the Blazers would be able to find somebody to work with for such a trade. What do you think realistically could happen with Myers, would happen with Myers? Where do we go from here?
I mean, first of all, anybody who's not familiar, like, I love Myers. Like, as a person, one of my favorite dudes ever. I've had the opportunity to talk to him a couple times. The dude is as real and genuine as it gets, and that's why his teammates love him. The basketball stuff, though, it just hasn't been able to come together. And Kerry, whether it's Jason Quick, whether it's Mike Richmond, Joe Freeman, they'll all tell you the same thing. The dude is just a saint. He gives the best interviews possible. He's a fantastic human being. And every one of them would say the same thing, that they just want to see the guy do well. And ultimately, when it always comes back to, when I'm talking to anybody about him, is that he just needs a fresh start. The problem here is his contract. Realistically, it's not getting moved unless it's attached to CJ McCollum or a first-round pick, or Portland is taking back another contract that's as bad, if not worse. So the viable basketball alternatives are very, very limited.
So in the third year, he's entering the third year of his 4-year contract. So
he's got 2 years
remaining. And his do you know off the top of your head, is his fourth year a player option or is it just 4 years straight up?
I believe the fourth is guaranteed.
I cannot, sidebar, I cannot believe how many player option contracts people handed out that summer. Did anybody hand out a team option?
I swear
to God, every time I swear it's all player options. They were just handing them out. Okay, so guaranteed. So anyway, entering the third year of that, $10 million. Maybe he's almost to 11 right now. There's quite a few players out there nowadays making $10 million. I mean, a lot more than were 3 years ago. I mean, you know what I mean? Like every year, a few more people come on with that. So do you really think that there's no possible way that there could be a trade, let's call an even trade, as opposed to a we need to bail out of this kind of trade? Do you really think that like no team who's building, team who wants a good solid vet who maybe values all of that in him more than his on the field performance? I mean, does anybody even have enough cap space that they could make a move with that, you know, that kind of a nice to have luxury type move?
Nah, not really.
Nobody's left that has enough to play around
it's
with.
It's just one of those things. It sucks, to be honest, for mm-hmm. Portland and for Myers. They're just kind of in a weird, wonky space right now. I'm just looking around the league right now, and it's nuts when you take into consideration like what exactly top flight centers are making. I mean, the only guys that are really making more than Myers.
It's such a rough market for centers right now anyway.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the
guys. It's going to be a rough market for centers.
If you look at the guys that are making at or commensurate value of Myers or more, Vucevic, Miles Plumlee. Get that bag, Miles.
Ooh.
Yeah. Marcin Gortat, Tyson Chandler, Mason Plumlee, Gorgie Dieng, Mozgov, Valanciunas, Tristan Thompson, Mahinmi, Biyombo, Noah. And then you start getting into the big boys, Cousins, Kanter, Gobert, Adams, those guys. So, I mean, that middle area is just full of bad contracts with Noah, Biyombo, Mahinmi, Mozgov, Jang, both Plumleys.
I mean, I don't know. I guess for some of those, I couldn't see Myers being detrimental as a trade to one of those teams. I mean, you know, some of those other guys aren't doing anything anyway. And, no, you know, when Myers...
That's probably your best case scenario is hoping that one of these teams wants the swap and each team gets a player that's more rejuvenated out of it. I mean, that's really what you're hoping for.
That's the thing. Well, so our friend Olivia, who listens to the podcast, shout out Olivia. She had some questions about Myers. She's also a big fan of Myers Leonard and would love to see him get more time on the court. And her question was, what can Myers do to get on the court? Like, what does he need to do next season in order to earn playing time?
Like, I mean, say it's trust.
You waved a magic wand. What does he have to do?
I mean, it's one thing, and it's trust. His coaches and his teammates need to be able to trust in him, and he's going to deliver what he needs to deliver, that he's going to make the right decisions when it comes time. And the thing is about Myers is I think ultimately, more often than not, he makes the right decision. It's that he's delayed with it.
Mm-hmm. It's just a second too slow or a half a second or a millisecond. Mm-hmm.
And that's the difference in the NBA. And I think that it's at a point, at least here in Portland, where – every decision he makes, bad or good, is scrutinized to an exorbitant level. People are looking for him to make mistakes and looking for him to succeed. You know, it's almost like when he's able to, like, really, when he does something, you can see all the Myers defenders, and I'm one of them, really celebrate it because we want to see him do well. And the same thing for the ones that want to see, you know, Myers struggle. You know, they celebrate every single mistake. And the only way to be able to get past that, around that, is to get out there and deliver consistently. I mean, if he can do that, then he's a bargain at $10 million. I mean, the average salary for...
go ahead. Well, does it have to do with building trust in practice, or does it have to do
games.
Okay, I'm going to send you out there.
Yeah,
I mean, you have to do it, and if he doesn't do it, then boom, he's pulled.
Basically, yeah. Like his leash is so short right now. Like, these guys have all been around Myers long enough to know what he's capable of doing, whether he's doing it in practice or doing it in shoot-arounds or wherever, in summer camps, you know, at pickup games. It, for him, it's just a matter of being able to make it happen on the court. If he can deliver there, he can really help this team. I mean, he offers something to this team that, you know, they really don't have a lot of them. We've hit on it, again, a million times. Positional versatility. There's just not a lot of that out there. So for them to be able to – or for him to be able to kind of put that together, he's got to find a way to deliver consistently. And he's kind of – I don't want to say it's a hole he's dug, but it's the position that he's in. That's just the way he's going to have to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we shall see what happens. another piece of news that broke that doesn't necessarily directly have to do with Portland, but a lot of people in Portland had their eyes on it. Dwayne Casey is out in Toronto. So we touched on this recently. What does that mean for the Blazers? Is Stotts any safer knowing that Dwayne Casey is out and Stotts is still in, or are things, do you think, are still in flux?
I think at this point, this was kind of the shoe that I was waiting to – the other shoe I was waiting to drop was whether or not Dwayne Casey got fired. I know when I said this a couple weeks ago that if Cleveland swept the Raptors, Casey would lose his job. I had a bunch of people saying that there's no way that's happening. They just – franchise record wins, made it to the second round. DeRozan was an MVP consideration. All these things.
I'm coach of the year.
Yeah, coach of the year. Like, listen, folks, it doesn't matter. Like, you could just get the feeling from the organization that was what was going to happen. You had Masai Ujiri going into the locker room apparently after game three and giving Casey an earful for not doubling LeBron, I believe it was. Casey's not without blame, but it's just – it's a cutthroat business for certain. Now that it's been a few days, though, and we haven't heard anything about Stotts, I think he may be safer at this point because I think the executives around the league are going to want to put their coaches in place here pretty quickly. We've seen
a couple of them. Yeah,
they're getting scooped up.
Okay, so I went to a really dark place with this one.
Oh,
goody. I know. I thought you would like this. This is like the little bit of evil in me that you occasionally get a glimpse of like, you know, on the surface, I'm all smiles and charms, but I have some just evil intentions sometimes. Would somebody be so petty as to hold on to a coach long enough so that all the other good positions got snapped up before they then decided to release their coach? Now, I am not saying that
things got
the situation
bad enough between
here.
Management and a coach. Yeah. Yeah. That would definitely,
but say you got mad at the coach because everybody else was mad at you and you wanted to teach him a lesson. I don't know why that would be a good lesson to teach, but like, is there a precedent for that level of pettiness in the
GMs
front
and coaches?
Offices?
Yeah, no, GM and coaches have done this kind of thing before.
Can you recall some juicy ones?
I want to say there was one in Sacramento. Had I looked this up, I would have been able to pull a couple because I can think of them off the top of my head, but I can't think of the names. But yeah, I mean,
but front offices have been known to do something like that before.
Not,
I mean, I wouldn't
hate
to think anything like that might be going on, but
no. And the thing is, I wouldn't think that was going on in Portland anyways, because they're the, both Neil O'Shea and Terry Stotts are both represented by the same man.
Oh, so that's right.
They're both represented by the most powerful agent in the NBA right now. I mean, it's the same guy that runs the Las Vegas Summer League. He's kind of the godfather of Vegas.
So that would get way more complicated if that's what
was. Yeah, exactly. And if you're going to do something like that, you're essentially blacklisting yourself to a certain group. And with that,
see, that's why I wouldn't be good at being evil, Dan.
Yeah.
I don't think these things through.
Yeah, you have to remember that you can nuke a bridge. It's just not like it hasn't happened.
You just can't go back over it.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you know, if you think the players are petty, it doesn't just stop with them. I mean, coaches and GMs and owners, they can all do it too. So it wouldn't be the first time we've heard of something like that. But yeah, I don't think it's a case here in Portland. I think that Ole Shane Stotts probably believe that they're joined at the hip. So I wouldn't expect too much different there.
On the days where I'm not thinking evil thoughts, I go to the happy place, which is looking at the. Wait, did you just say what I think you said?
Happy places.
You just said you love happy places?
Yeah, that's where you put all your misery, right? So you can be happy.
I don't know that we've visited your happy place before, Dan, but we'll talk about that in a minute. But
it's a scary
now happy you've got
place.
Me off my game. I can't remember what I was thinking about.
Mission accomplished.
You totally derailed me. Oh, I know. So the Blazers, over the last few years, they've been out of the front office. They've been preaching that, you know, they haven't been saying it's a process, but we need to be patient. And I've said before that I think Terry Stotts is one of the most patient coaches on earth. They struggled and then got their offense together. And then they came together and they figured out how to play defense but their offense struggled. Towards the end of the season, they started to figure out how to put their offense and defense together. And I like to think that next year, on top of playing offense and defense together, then they'll figure out the extra step they need to take to make it farther in the playoffs. And the only way they're going to do that is with the consistency of somebody like Terry Stotts, who, again, is the most patient man on earth. And they just, you know, keep plugging forward, and they, without being able to make, you know, big ground making moves. If you look at it, they've been consistent in their remaining
in the mediocrity.
Focused on this.
Yes.
But no, and focus and growing steadily and adding new things and, you know, putting it together. They have gotten better every year. Don't you think they have gotten better every year? Not by leaps and bounds. You don't think they've gotten better every year?
No.
You don't think they're better this year than they were last year, even with their improved defense?
I think they're basically the same team. I mean, there's been the only real change in this team has been Damian Lillard going from star to superstar. And that's worth probably.
But what about their
games.
Defense? Is that because Damian went from star to superstar? There's more going on in their defense than just Damian going from star to superstar.
Yeah, it's called caring. I mean, that's
so
really
isn't that an improvement?
To.
Is that not an improvement?
Not enough to at least for me to justify keeping this group together. Like I just don't
okay.
I don't understand that.
I'm just saying they're not going backwards.
No, but sometimes you need to go backwards to go forwards.
Right. But they have been consistent in saying that they are not going backwards. They are steadily building.
Well, you got to sell something when you're stuck in the same place.
Well, at least they've been consistent about it.
Mm. Consistent
happy place, Dan.
Yeah, consistent messaging is what I want.
Well, speaking of blowing it up,
yes.
CJ McCollum has been all over the place since the Blazers were out of the playoffs. He's
suddenly
got
he
his podcast dropping. He's on Fox Sports. He's on ESPN. He's all over the place. Most recently, he was on First Take talking with Max Kellerman and Stephen A. Smith. And they, of course, asked him about breaking up him and Dame, which I think is kind of weird to ask the player, like, should we break you two up? Like, did that strike you as an odd question to ask a player? I mean,
no. I mean, it's the one question I think that if you talk about Portland outside of Portland, they're like, oh, hey, Damian Lillard, or hey, they should break up Dame and CJ, or they shouldn't. Like, those are the two most common talking points that anybody I talk to about the Portland Trailblazers outside the immediate market.
But what's CJ going to say? Yeah, trade me.
I mean,
that's just a weird question.
Well, the thing is, like, when you say break them up, like, everybody knows that if the breaking up is going to occur, he's the one out. So what's he going to say? Yeah, trade me, and, you know, send me to basketball purgatory in Phoenix or Orlando or Memphis or someplace ridiculous like that? Like, he's not going to say that. Who wants to go to those places? I mean, those are the likely destinations that I've always heard are Milwaukee, Orlando. I've heard Memphis and Phoenix kicked around for draft picks, but I just don't think that McCollum's going to pull McCollum, or a package of McCollum and Collins in a first, is really enough to pull a top three pick in this draft. That's how crazy this draft is. But, I mean, yeah, he's not going to say that.
So why ask him? I just think it's a weird question to ask.
Well, I mean, but anyway. Well, the thing is, like, just look at how CJ interacts on social media lately. Like, he's been a little feisty. Ask the question. Mm-hmm. See if he gets a little feisty. I mean, that's their job.
Yeah, there's a lot of yelling on that show. I don't usually watch First Take.
Yeah, no, you're not missing anything.
There's a lot of yelling. But anyway, CJ said that if they traded, it would be a lateral move, and he doesn't think that Blazers would improve. It sounds like you agree with that.
I don't think necessarily it would be a lateral move, because we're not talking about, like, how can you say it's a lateral move when you don't know what the return is?
Oh, I didn't say it. CJ said it. Do you agree with him?
No, hell no. Like, that's why I was talking, like, the idea, like, of it being a lateral move. He is like, well, I don't want to get traded. I can't control where I'm traded to. Like, what? How do you know it's a lateral move? Like, what if a team decides that they're going a different direction with their star? Is that now a lateral move?
Yeah. What do you think he meant by lateral move? Do you think that he meant just like nobody's going to get any more wins?
No, you're not going to get any better than what you have with me. Like, I'm going to be that guy. He's keeping his stock high.
So you couldn't get anybody any better than me. For me,
I don't even know if it was for me. I think it's more of like, you're not getting anybody better than me. Mm-hmm. Like, really? Not to say that would happen, but let's say that same package, CJ Collins in a first for Kawhi Leonard. Is that a lateral move? No.
Not for Portland.
Hell no. Exactly. So the idea that, you know, everything is a lateral move, if you just take the person out of it, and you could put Neil Olshey right there. Like, you could almost hear Neil Olshey, like, when CJ was talking.
That's totally what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Is it okay for us to say that out loud?
Yeah. I mean, that's it's company line. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they had, when CJ goes to these things, he's probably understanding that these questions are coming. So he's going to have something prepared.
Right.
And it's going to match the company line.
He sticks to his talking points, and his talking points are like you were just sitting at a Blazer front office press conference. He really sticks to him. I was like, wow, that's that's amazing.
I mean, that's a professional journalist right there. That's how they handle it.
Is that a professional journalist, or is that journalists aren't supposed to come out with talking points.
No, so let me put it this way. Point. Someone who understands what it's like to be a professional journalist and prepares accordingly.
Yeah, someone who's prepared because they know what a journalist would come at him with. Yeah, no, it's just weird with the, right now there's a lot of players showing up on all of these different shows. You know, Oladipo's been on The Jump, I think, a few times. And, you know, these players who are no longer playing and who are interested in trying out some, you know, broadcast time, they're all starting to show up to, you know, make commentary and stuff. CJ is just so polished, and yes, he has the journalism background. He's just so polished that it's almost like he's coming off as like a PR representative rather than a journalist. And maybe that's just because he's the one who's usually answering the questions rather than asking the questions. But I don't know.
No, CJ's professional in that matter. Like, he absolutely unequivocally knows what he's saying, how he's saying it, and why he's saying it. Everything he does is measured. Whether or not you look at that as a positive or negative, when he says something, I tend to believe that there's always an intent behind it. He chooses his words very wisely. There's definitely a place for that in the league. Like, I mean, if you're trying to market yourself, build yourself, brand yourself a certain way, I mean, he's kind of establishing how you do that. I mean, how hard is it to believe that CJ McCollum is going to be hosting NBA on ESPN in 10 years?
Mm-hmm. He's setting himself up for that, and he's smooth.
So he understands what he's doing out there, and I don't blame him, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing in there that like irked me, kind of come back to it, is the lateral move. Like, that's that to me kind of reeks of protectionism. Like, he's protecting his own butt at all costs there. Kind of building himself up in the process. So that part of it kind of made me roll my eyes. But the other part of it, I mean, I don't think any other player is going to behave differently unless the situation is dire. Like, if he's trying to force a trade. Like, let's go back a year and imagine that was Kyrie. What do you, Stephen A. Smith, do you and LeBron need to be split up? And he'll go on about some flat earth theory, some ridiculousness. And then, like, through some form of philosophy, he'll talk about one part is greater than the other, yin and yang, and hashtag woke. And then somehow he'll throw in some subtext, you know, BS about how he's better than LeBron. I mean, that's the difference between somebody who's constantly measuring and marketing themselves versus somebody who's Kyrie. I don't know. I don't know any other way to explain it other than, like, hashtag Kyrie. Yeah. I mean, that's really...
That was an interesting way to think about it, though. Like, how would he have answered that question?
To get on a Kyrie tangent, if you ever want to play a fun game, do you know the movie Watchmen?
Not well.
Okay. Big blue
dude. But I'm sure our listeners do, so go ahead.
Big blue dude, Dr. Manhattan, basically becomes, like, next to a god, and he waxes philosophical all the time. And there was somebody on Twitter, I think a year ago, is this a Dr. Manhattan or Kyrie quote? And you really couldn't tell the difference between the two. And it was just, it's a fun game to play. Is this a Kyrie or Dr. Manhattan quote?
Well, yeah, I mean, he's been scarce, you know, because he missed the last part of the season. So we haven't really gotten a lot of, our fill of Kyrie, but speaking Kyrie, nailing the transitions tonight, Dan. Whoop. Speaking of Kyrie, the Cavs and the Celtics played this afternoon, and it was a rout of the Cavs, which surprised me. Did it surprise you?
Well, yes and no. I think it's time to stop underrating the Celtics and talking about how this is just some glorious run. It's all the coach. Yeah, Brad Stevens is a great coach. But it turns out Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are really good players. Like, who knew?
Yeah, they really are.
I mean,
and Al Horford. Horford.
Well, to me, go by Horford is, like, people that don't know. Snotty Drifton, James Hollis, Celtics fan. He says this all the time on Twitter. He goes, when I am not sure if somebody's, like, how good somebody's basketball takes will be or what their basketball knowledge is, I ask them what they think of Al Horford. And that answer alone will kind of tell me how much basketball they watch. Because Horford is just that guy. He's a winner. He gets it done. He's just kind of a jack of all trades. He's a hell of a leader. Right place, right time. He's just one of those guys that you love to have on your team because he can just kind of do it all. He's not going to put up gaudy stats, but he's going to deliver every night. Everybody looks at his box score stats. It's like, look at the plus-minus tonight. And plus-minus for him was plus 17, and he's taking on the task of guarding LeBron James.
And he's why Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum have more freedom to do what they do best.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have to pay attention to the stuff, all the little stuff, because Horford's paying attention to the details. So they picture stuff, I guess.
And then you take his basketball acumen and pair that with Brad Stevens, and then you put a bunch of stupidly athletic dudes around him. In Brown,
Long.
Morris, Tatum, Smart, Rozier, Semi, I mean, Yabusele. I mean,
I want more Yabusele.
Yeah, no, I hate the Celtics, but I want more Yabu in my life.
Yeah, I do.
Love him. Long live the big butts. Let them all thrive. But you mean you throw those guys out there and they're just dogs who can switch across the board and get after you. Like, when you look at that team, positionally, how many two-way players do they have? Jaylen Brown, Marcus Morris, Al Horford, Jason Tatum. Smart's the non-shooter, but I think offensively his tenacity and his doggedness and ability to kind of get downhill is huge for them. And then Terry Rozier. I mean, they're not lacking. The scary thing is, obviously, that they're doing this without Kyrie and Hayward. But how much does that change this team if Brown and Tatum aren't out there as much because you've got Hayward as well? I mean, the other alternative here is that you have Tatum, Brown, Hayward out there at the same time, which for defenses, which would be opposing defenses, would be a complete nightmare. I think the big story, though, obviously, besides Al Horford and his, not only his box score contribution, because he was 8 of 10 from the field, but all those little things that we were talking about. There was a couple plays where you could see that Brad Stevens had basically pre-switched to take away some of the Cavs schemes to get somebody smaller on LeBron, and basically made it to where the switch would end up with Al Horford on LeBron on the short side. And that's a lot different.
I love the idea of no matter what, Al Horford just popping up right next to LeBron.
Yeah, that's basically what they tried to do. And
it's like the Celtics version of whack-a-mole.
Yeah.
Like, help and recover.
Make everybody else beat you. Put your best matchup on him and see what you can do to limit everybody else.
But this is one game, and I'm so confused about the Cavs, because 2 months ago, they were terrible. They were, like, playing horrible defense. They didn't know what they were doing. They had just rebuilt for the second time in a year, mm-hmm. and it just looked like they, you know, could barely even bend over to tie their shoes, much less do anything else. And now they just, you know, picked apart Toronto and left their corpse on the...
Toronto, for people who want to say that the Cavs aren't in the Raptors' heads, you're crazy. You don't go in and sweep them with that Cavs roster without being in their heads. Like, I know that's crazy to say that without being there, blah, 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 blah. I'm sorry, you do not win 59 games, then get swept unless somebody is just completely and totally and utterly in your head.
So how do you think the Cavs and Celtics matchup goes? Do you think that it's going to be long, or do you think that the Celtics just have their number and that's going
to
be it?
No, I think it goes long, and I still think the Cavs will find a way to win. It's just incredibly hard for me to doubt LeBron.
It really is.
How many consecutive playoff series has he won in the Eastern Conference now? Is it 24? He hasn't lost in the Eastern Conference a series since 2011. Oh, thanks, Siri. That's great of you.
You're yelling and Siri's yelling back.
Yeah, apparently I was yelling loud enough that Siri picked me up. Sorry, folks. We'll have to take care of Siri later. What are we talking about? I'm talking about dealing with Siri here. Come on now.
Okay, so here's the thing I was thinking about with LeBron. You know how tonight or at the press conference this afternoon, someone said what happened, and then he proceeded to, from memory, recite the first five plays, right? So that coupled with a recent podcast that I think David Griffin was on, you know, recalling working with LeBron and talking about how LeBron can learn things on the fly as he's going and simultaneously teach the other players on the court what they're supposed to do, including players on the other team, where he was pointing out to the other team, hey, you're supposed to be over there guarding that guy. So the thing about LeBron is he's like artificial intelligence, except that he's human, which is so incredible.
And he's 6'10", 270.
Yeah, I mean, he's basically like the Terminator metal thing, but a human.
Yeah, no,
which is even scarier.
People want to have the discussions about the greatest of all time, Michael Jordan or LeBron, blah, blah, blah. To me, I watched them both play. Like, LeBron, mm-hmm. he's that guy. He's bigger, faster, stronger, more versatile.
Well, I believe he brings his whole self to the game.
Yeah, and it's not just the physical stuff. It's like what you're talking about, the mental acumen, his basketball IQ. And this isn't to take away or throw any shots at Jordan. I still think people, if you want to say Jordan's the best, fine. That's fine. I don't necessarily disagree with your point of view. I just have a different point of view. I just think LeBron and what he's able... I mean, the teams that he's taken to the finals, like you look at the 2008 team, you look at what he's done to this team. The stats from the last series against the Raptors, where he outscored, out-rebounded, out-assisted DeRozan and Lowry combined.
Two guards.
Two all-star guards, and one of them was an MVP candidate. Like, that's just nutty. And to do it now in his 15th year. And I mean, I don't want to beat the 24-hour news cycle that is LeBron Watch or LeBron Wire here. Shout out David McKay for doing that. But
you mean Eric Garcia Gunderson?
I thought Eric had the Celtics. I don't know. I'm getting them all mixed up now. Just shout out David McKay.
It's hard when we have to think about all the other, but just in general, David McKay, shout out to you.
Because he's our guy. but yeah, I mean, there's just so much that LeBron does and is capable of doing more than just the
physical. Well, he's going to have to do a lot more than 15 points in a game moving forward.
He does have one of these.
If he's going to beat the Celtics.
Yeah, he always has one of these every playoffs. I don't think
the Celtics will
figure it out. The magic answer is Marcus Morris and Al Horford, but I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll see. Well, so real quick, team from the Bay Area versus the Houston Rockets, first game tomorrow night.
Can we shoot them both?
First game,
into the
how
sun?
Do you think it's going to go?
I think the Warriors are going to come out and try and embarrass them.
Yeah,
I think that they just absolutely try and light them up. The way the Warriors are talking in the press conferences leading up and stuff, it sounds like they want to go in there and, like I said before, assert dominance. I think they basically want to burn Houston to ash and let everybody just kind of remember and recognize who's still running things. I don't think the Warriors are going to sweep them, but I think it could go as short as five.
I just hope that these conference finals end up being good competition and good basketball. I'm worried that each game is going to be wildly lopsided on either way. Yeah. You know, like one team could blow the other one out, and then the next game the other team could blow the other team out. And I hope it's we get some exciting, tight, down to the wire games out of it.
That's great that somebody wants that. I want Houston to get absolutely destroyed. I despise that franchise just so much. I don't care how awful it makes me sound. I want them to get completely obliterated.
I don't think there's any fan base that I dislike that much.
Really haven't spent a lot of time around Houston fans, have you?
I don't know. I can't build up that much resentment towards anyone just because I put myself in their shoes, you know? Like, I'm sure there's all kinds of people.
No, you don't want to put yourself in
those shoes.
People probably
ignore Blazer fans.
You don't want to put yourself in those shoes. That's just, it's not a good place to be. It's not a healthy mental state. It's just,
All right. Well, we got one last update, and that is Blazer 5 Gaming. Our esports team, new favorite pastime.
Which you're getting into.
I know. I watched a little bit of the first game of the season. They are now 1-0 in league play. They defeated Magic Gaming, and I wish they were called Magic the Gaming. I think that would be a good thing, but it's not. They're just Magic Gaming. So Blazers defeated them, and their next game is on the 19th versus the Knicks. Knicks team just beat the Warriors team, I believe. So
that's how you know it's video games.
What?
That's how you know it's a video game. The Knicks are beating the Warriors.
Yeah.
They're also backed by Turtle.
They had a video of One Wild Walnut's greatest reactions during the game that was pretty entertaining. So if people are looking for content to watch, it's really just him making all these really funny faces and pointing at his teammates and, you know, doing little dances in his chair. Apparently the Blazers have like a new chair sponsor too.
Speaking of,
so that's exciting.
Of making content, we should try to have you on Blazers Outsiders playing a game of 2K against me.
You're gonna teach me how to play live? Oh, that should be really entertaining.
Yeah. we'll make that happen. See how that goes. You can bring your charcuterie board.
You just want to make sure that I never get asked back again, aren't you? You're setting me up, Dan. You're like, yeah, we'll have Tara come on the Outsiders
and
she'll play
a
video game,
and
then she'll do terrible and she'll never want to come on again.
No, you bring meats and cheese, we'll beg you to come back.
I can arrange that. I know people.
Yeah, see?
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's fun. I'm glad that more people are getting exposed to the esports, particularly 2K gaming. It's different for sure, and it's not for everybody. But I would I would ask the people that are interested in it to check it out. And if you've got questions, you can hit me up. You can hit us up on the podcast. And if it's something you want to hear us discuss a little bit more, or if you want us to shut up about it, either way.
Yeah.
It's just something that's interesting to kind of figure out exactly what's going on outside of the traditional.
I asked you a question.
Basketball.
You did not answer me.
Which one
I asked
was that?
You why there's a – I asked you why – so on the Y2K court – you know, there's
Y2K.
Five players on each side.
Y2K, folks.
What did I call it?
The Y2K bug is here.
Yeah. You know what I mean. So, but when they're playing on the court, there's like a referee at the end and on the side. And then there's a bank of empty chairs where if they were actual people, they would go sit. But I haven't seen them sit. And there's way more chairs than there are players,
you
too.
I don't understand. It's designed that way so that when you actually are in a franchise mode or anything like that, there are people actually sitting on the bench. And if you call timeout, they will go to the bench.
But there's nobody on the bench.
Yes, because there's only five in the game. There's no. If there was a full 12-man roster.
But there's six players on the team. Where's the other guy?
He's not sitting there. It's not designed that way. If it's a full, you know, 12-man active roster, like when you're playing franchise mode and you're controlling everybody, there will be everybody sitting in the seats. They don't change the code or anything along those lines to facilitate it for the league. So they just kind of leave it in there.
Okay, they can make these look completely lifelike and realistic, and they can't rewrite the code to remove the chairs from the floor
when
there's nobody sitting in them.
In the list of complaints for 2K, that one's pretty low.
It's just glaring. It's just like staring at me in the face.
I love that this was the first thing.
It's distracting, frankly.
For everybody, this is not a joke. Like, this is like Tara just hits me up on Twitter out of nowhere. Why is this a thing? Out of all the things that were going on in a game of NBA 2K, that's the one that got her.
I just want people to, you know, to know that I am watching. I'm watching carefully, and I'm still waiting on the answer. That was not ever. I still don't get it.
We'll hit up the folks
anyway,
at 2K. We'll hit up Ronnie 2K and see if we can get his answer.
Anyway, Dan, let's got anything else you want to bring up before we sign off?
No, that's it. It's just the usual grind here for me. Got Blizzard's Outsiders on Tuesdays and Thursdays, 7 p.m. on NBC Sports Northwest and NBC Sports Northwest Rip City Radio, and also broadcasting on Facebook Live. So, yeah, we're pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, and don't forget to find the Blazers Edge podcast, like we said at the top of the show, on Apple Podcast. Is that what it's called?
Yep,
and subscribe if you haven't already, and rate and review. I have a podcast episode also coming out later on this week, which, if everything goes well, should be a really exciting episode. I'm really looking forward to it. So keeping my fingers crossed that everything comes through as planned. You can find me on Twitter at TCBBigs. And don't forget, you can also email us at BlazersEdgePod@gmail.com. Send us your thoughts, what's on your mind over the summer, so that we can know what you want to talk about. Dan, go ahead and take us out of here.
All right, folks, you can find me on Twitter at DMarang, same for Instagram and everywhere else, basically for all the social media needs. Like Tara said, like, rate, review, subscribe, rinse and repeat, do it all over again, because that's how you win in the podcast game. For Tara Bowen Biggs, I'm Danny Ryan. We'll catch you guys later.